This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. On this archive edition, we have an interview with saxophonist Ravi Coltrane. He has a name that could inspire and intimidate any jazz musician. Ravi is the son of the late saxophonist John Coltrane, one of the most revered figures in jazz. Ravi's mother is jazz pianist and harp player Alice Coltrane. John and Alice named their son after the Indian sitar player Ravi Shankar. Ravi Coltrane has played with such musicians as Roy Hargrove, Charlie Hayden, Kenny Barron, and Elvin Jones, who for many years was a member of the John Coltrane Quartet. Ravi also leads his own band. He has a new CD called From the Round Box. It's his second CD as a leader. Jerry Allen is the pianist. Let's hear a track from it. This is the Wayne Shorter tune, Blues a la Carte. I spoke with Ravi Coltrane in 1998. You play tenor and soprano, same instruments as your father. Did you intend it that way?
No. Nothing. There was no real design at all. There was no pre-plan in how I came about into dealing with jazz music or dealing with the saxophones or dealing with tenor and soprano specifically. It happened in a way that was pretty natural, you know, and
what was that way?
Well, I got really caught up in music, you know, as I got older, I started hearing my father's music in a way that I hadn't really heard as a younger person, and you know, from that it allowed me to listen to other players like Charlie Parker and Sonny Rollins. I always name those two because they were real early listening experiences that I had that were really meaningful. I've heard the music all my life, but it really didn't affect me until I got older. I wasn't thinking about jazz as a young person. You know, I spent more time listening to the things that we always listen to, you know, Kool and the Gang and Earth, Wind and Fire and, you know, the Jackson 5 and James Brown. You know, I mean, really, my early years of listening to music. Later on, I started listening to, you know, the Beatles and things like that, and a lot of classical music and things. And the jazz, it was fun, but it hadn't made a real impact, you know, beyond just it being a fun music.
I know you never really knew your father. I think he died before you were two.
Yeah, he died in 67. I was born in 65.
So, but you knew of him through his music. Did you, when you were young, did you investigate his life at all? Did you feel this kind of emotional desire to know more about the man who was your father?
Well, I've always had a sense of who he was as a person from, you know, things I've been told, you know, by my family, you know. So that aspect was, you know, I never felt a complete void there. You know, there was always, you know, there was always that I could that I could have and hold on to, you know. As far as the musical history, that was something that I had to do myself, and it didn't happen until I got older, you know.
How old were you when you realized how your father was revered, and it really went beyond admired into revered? And what impact did it have on you to get a sense of that?
As I got older, I started to become more aware that he was, you know, his impact was greater than, you know, the things that I had seen as a younger person, you know, and those things were just within our kind of household, I guess, you know, and I was a real admirer of my mom. You know, she raised me, and I, you know, had opportunities to go into the studio with her and travel with her, so I always knew that there was a kind of thing, you know, for her and my father, obviously, but as, you know, as I got out on my own, I could see how my father's music was, you know, it seemed to have been influencing a lot of people, you know, people that I hadn't, you know, even imagined that it might influence.
Well, I should also ask you this. How did you start to play soprano?
The soprano came first, actually. I was, you know, I played the clarinet in junior high and high school, and my mother brought me, bought me a soprano when I was 16, and it was her only real kind of overt sort of push into, you know, why don't you check this out? You know, most of my life, she never said, you should check this out, or you should play jazz, or you should do this, or, you know, she never pushed any kind of music on us or anything, really. You know, when we had a desire for something, she would support it, you know, so when I played the clarinet, she kind of made sure I had a nice instrument and I got private lessons and things like that. And but the soprano was, I think, her kind of way of saying, well, you know, maybe it's time to you know, check this out if you like.
Why don't we pause here to listen to a track that features you on soprano saxophone.
Okay.
Why don't we hear In Three for Thee? Do you want to say something about this before we hear it?
Well, just briefly, it's an older tune. Most of the compositions on the record, I guess, maybe came about in the last year or so. But this tune, I think I wrote when I was still in college, and it was written for my niece before she was born.
Okay.
So that's the story there.
I know you had an older brother, John Coltrane Jr., who died in a car accident, I believe, in 1982. How old was he at the time of his death?
He was 17. He was 17, just shy of 18.
What happened?
It was a very unfortunate accident. You know, he had been hanging out with some friends. You know, and. You know, it's you're at that age where you're, you know, it's cool to be hanging out later and later each night, and you know, drinking beer and things like that. It's this new thing, and he felt that he couldn't drive himself, so he let his friend drive. You know, and his friend was even more, you know, out of it than my brother was at this time, and his friend fell asleep at the wheel, and they, you know, they ran into a row of parked cars, and. You know, it was a real wake up call. You know, a real wake up call for all of us. You know,
did it make you any more careful or careless in your life?
You know, it made me think a lot more about you know, what we're supposed to be doing while we're here. I guess, you know, it was I think the break from childhood. I guess, you know, like you know, I'd. After he passed, everything kind of stopped for me, and you know, I took about 4 years where I didn't do anything. I didn't play any instruments or any music, or you know, and just kind of thought about you know, trying to find some direction. I guess, you know, trying to find something. And
why did you stop playing? Did that seem like a frivolous direction and one that you should give up in the light of this? You know, tragedy in your family?
Everything shut down, you know, everything shut down. You know, there was no choice or any conscious thought about it. Everything shut down, you know, and, you know, I took the test to leave school a year early. I just, you know, it was unbelievable, you know. It was too hard to function, you know, doing anything at that time. You know, and it took me a while. It took me until about 19. He passed in the summer 82, and it took me about till 85, 86 to really get it together again. You know, to really to try to start up again. And I don't just mean music. I mean, just as a person, I guess. You know.
It's a really treacherous period to be shut down in. Those are such formative years.
Most definitely. You know, a lot of my friends were going off to college, and I was still, you know, trying to figure out what I was going to do, and just kind of floating, I call it. You know, I was, you know, letting time go by, and at this time I started playing my father's records to kind of get, you know, that history thing with him that I hadn't really had, you know, didn't really have a solid grasp on that, you know, growing up. I wanted to have like a deeper knowledge of his thing, you know, and that's when the music started speaking to me. You know, I think that I never realized it until this year when I started doing these interviews and talking about these things so much that's how it kind of happened for me. You know, that there was a real void in my life, and that the music it had another effect on me at this point. You know, there was something in the sound of it, you know, in my father's music. There was like a calling that I hadn't heard before. You know, it was something that, I don't know.
So how did you decide to start playing it more seriously yourself?
It was that part was not the plan part. You know, I wanted, I was getting so involved as a listener and really enjoying the music on, you know, this other level that I wanted to see if it was something that I could do as a player, you know. And, I had never really had any training in improvising or studied any type of jazz music before. And I just wanted to go to school to see if it was something that I, you know, might have any ability, you know, in or any desire to do, really. You know, I was really enjoying the music as a listener, and I wanted to see if, you know, if playing could be, you know, in there.
Is this when you started studying with Charlie Hayden at the California Institute of the Arts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That must have been interesting for you because, I mean, Charlie Hayden is, one of the, you know, greatest jazz bass players, and surely he knows your father's music.
Mm-hmm.
And was it intimidating to study with Charlie Hayden and feeling that, I don't know how old you were then, but...
I was 21.
It was just considered kind of old. Start studying seriously.
Most definitely. And I think, I wish that I could have been involved in doing this earlier and earlier, but, my life developed the way it did, and I fortunately got involved when I did.
On this archive edition, we have an interview with saxophonist Ravi Coltrane, the son of John Coltrane. He has a new CD called From the Round Box. Let's hear another track from it. This is Consequence. Thank you. Let's get back to our 1998 interview with saxophonist Ravi Coltrane.
I think a problem for anyone who starts playing seriously or starts playing at all when they're a little bit older is that your ability to hear goes so far beyond your ability to play. And mm-hmm. for some people, that's paralyzing. Did you feel at that point when you started seriously playing that you were a much more sophisticated listener than you were a player? And did that ever, trouble you or cripple you?
Well, considering I couldn't play at all when I started school, I was young as a listener too, really. You know, there were things
right.
I hadn't, you know,
right.
there was a lot of music that I hadn't heard. There's a lot of music today that I'm still trying to get to. You know, there's so much great music in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, working with Charlie, when I started there, like I said, I couldn't play at all. But my mother has this association with Charlie that goes way back. And, you know, I felt comfortable around him in that sense because I had met him before on several occasions. But, musically, I was kind of thrown into situations that I was definitely not ready for because of who I was, you know. And, that made it a little trickier for me.
When you started listening more seriously to your father's records, did it help give you clues about him as a person?
I feel that as my ears have changed and as I've grown as a musician, I've started to, to hear, I guess, more of a depth, I guess, in what was happening musically in the quartet and my father's writing and his improvisations, even especially in the later periods. You know, I feel there's a thread really that runs through all of his work, you know, even up until 66 and 67, that goes way back to, like, you know, him playing with Monk and Miles and even in R&B groups and things with Dizzy, you know. That right there shows you the kind of long-range thinking, you know, the kind of focus where you don't always know where you're going, but you know that you are headed in a direction, you know. And, you can hear that dedication. It's very, very clear.
I'm wondering if there are any people who come to your concerts who are also, like, great admirers of your father's and, devoted fans of his work, and if they project anything onto you and if they want to use you to get at his memory in any way. Do you know what I mean? Of being somebody who other people project things onto.
Right, right. I think people are, nostalgia is kind of, I don't know how I feel about that, you know. But people say, oh, you're filling his shoes or you're carrying his torch. And I don't see it like that. I'm extremely influenced by him, you know. And this person is not only, my father, but somebody I have, you know, this great, great respect for, you know. And I want to use his influence in a way that's not just about copying his licks, as we say, you know. You know, there's other ways to deal with a person's influence, and I'm trying to find those ways, you know, not only with John Coltrane's music, but with, you know, with all the music that I like, you know. And I'm trying to put that across in the things that I do, you know, like with this record and just how I present myself on gigs or as a sideman or wherever, you know. I think I'm trying to say that I understand you, you know, and I understand that you might want these things or see these things and you want me to be these things for you, but I'm trying to do something different. And maybe if you get past that thing, you know, maybe, you know, what I'm doing will be okay for you.
Well, Ravi Coltrane, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thanks, Terry. Thank you.
Ravi Coltrane recorded in 1998. He has a new CD called From the Round Box. He'll perform at the Bell Atlantic Jazz Festival in New York on June 9th.